Welcome, Dolphins fans, haters, and everyone in between to your favorite show discussing the greatest franchise in sports, the Miami Dolphins. This is the Fins Pod. My name is Moose, your host, and we're back, baby. Like the Dolphins' hopes and dreams, the Fins Pod has been resurrected and is ready to roll. And what a time! The Miami Dolphins, under new head coach Mike McDaniel, have come out to a 2-0 start with victories over the New England Patriots and the Baltimore Ravens. Today, we'll dive into the start of the season, what looks good, what areas we need to be cognizant of going forward, and what the ceiling of this team really is. Of course, we'll get into our studs and duds from the weekend. Glad to be back. Missed all of you. Let's get to it, and let's dive in. To start, before we get into the wild finish that occurred this past weekend in Baltimore, and it was wild, we're going to discuss the home opener just for a minute, because in hindsight, the Dolphins' offense wasn't really performing up to task, right? They only scored one touchdown and a field goal en route to a 20-7 win, and after the fact, after week one, you had national pundits and members of the fan base who were kind of disappointed in the Dolphins, right? You bring in Tyreek Hill, you hope for Tua to take that next step. You have Mike McDaniel, a young, offensive-minded head coach, and all you muster is one touchdown. Well, we know that that narrative shifted quickly, again, after week two, but it's important to understand why the Dolphins might have struggled in week one and why what we saw in week two might be more realistic of what they are going to be versus what we saw in week one. Because you need to know who the Dolphins were playing against in week one. Bill Belichick, he might not have his fastball anymore, right? He may suck as a talent evaluator and, in hindsight, rode the coattails of some great offensive minds. Josh McDaniels, Charlie Weiss, Bill O'Brien, who wasn't a great coach, but he's a good offensive-minded coach, good offensive coordinator, killing it for Bama. And, of course, he had Tom Brady throwing the ball for him. But the man can still coach defense. Not to mention, it's week one, and week one is always kind of wild. They're a division rival, so they know the Dolphins intimately. And there's a lot of other reasons for why. They know the core pieces. At the very least, 60% of the Dolphins roster, Tua included, Waddle, the whole defense, they have in-depth scouting reports about. Bill Belichick has seen these guys play, and specifically on the defensive side, we play the same scheme. So they know ways to kind of try to sustain some drives. Again, I think Miami did dominate that game overall, but they did, again, win 20-7, which, when you look at how the teams performed in week two, was closer than you wanted it to be, and Tua did not necessarily perform to the level that you expected, and that's why week two, to so many, was such a shock, because they thought week one Tua was what he was the last 2 years and nothing had changed. But again, the Patriots are going to win 7 games this season. It's good to see Miami take care of business against an inferior team. And I might be generous with 7 games. Their offense, it's straight up stuck in 2003. Matt Patricia's the OC. Joe Judge is the offensive coordinator. And again, they had a dogfight against Mitch Trubisky. That should tell you they're probably not going to be so good. But what matters is that the team started out the season with a dub. Tua improved to 4-0 in his career against the Pats, and they secured a vital division victory on their road to that playoff berth that we as Dolphins fans, you know, people are talking Super Bowl. Look, I'll take a playoff berth to start things off. But what I know we all want to get into, after the Dolphins went 1-0, after they spanked New England and, you know, proved once again that Mac Jones can't hold to his jockstrap, what happened this past Sunday? Look, I'm in my 20s. I don't remember Dan Marino. I remember a little bit of Jay Fiedler. I mean, he was kind of my first quarterback. Ricky Williams, the glorious defense, Jason Taylor, Zach Thomas. Then you got the next era, Ryan Tannehill, and of course the slew of coaches who came in with promises of change and ultimately failed. This is not hyperbole. What I'm about to say is not me like joking around. The game we all saw on Sunday was the best Dolphins game I have ever seen in my life as a fan. And not just that, it was also the single greatest quarterback performance by a Dolphins quarterback that I've witnessed in that same span. My life. Firstly, look, Tua's going to get all the credit. Duh. But second, you have been a listener of the show over the last few years, so I'm going to give some credit around so you know where I stand on Tua. You know that I felt this type of potential was there. So was I surprised? Well, at the outcome, the way the game came together at the end, the complete dominance displayed by Tua in the fourth quarter, definitely surprised there. But am I surprised what everyone's saying now? Oh, I guess he's a good quarterback. Am I surprised that Tua Tagovailoa played at an elite level? No. Am I surprised that with that offensive line, with actual time provided, a pocket, some weapons, and again, a coach who actually knows how to, you know, run an offensive system, a modern offense, am I surprised he balled out? Not really. What Tua did on Sunday, again, nothing short of miraculous from a, you know, game situation like perspective. Obviously, the throws he made, we always knew he could make those throws. There was nothing surprising. And frankly, as much as I know a lot of people might hate this, some of those deep bombs were a little underthrown. But the point being is I think he can improve upon that as the season goes. There's people out here who didn't even think he could throw it that far, which was ridiculous from the beginning. Again, dime after dime. It was his calm, cool demeanor. That didn't surprise me much. You saw that in college. You saw when we all first witnessed him on the national championship stage. Unless you're a diehard Bama fan and you were watching the fourth quarters of those blowouts his freshman year. But his ability to come back, the, as Tyreek Hill would say, the cojones, being down 35-14 in the fourth quarter. That, my friends, coming back to win is miraculous. Jumping into the stats, Tua Tagovailoa went 36 of 50 passing attempts. Was Brian Flores ever going to give Tua 50? He was probably going to bench him. That's a 72% completion rate on those 50 attempts, which is amazing when you consider the volume. He finished with 469 yards, 6 touchdowns, yes, that's the number after 5, and 2 picks. He averaged 9.4 yards per attempt, which, I don't know, that doesn't seem to be super dink and dunk. Let's look around the league, see what some of these other strong-arm quarterbacks average. But again, not just that, there was a look in the kid's eye. At the end of the game, he was playing with a confidence that I just didn't see in the two seasons prior. Now, we obviously know why that is. If you're listening to this podcast, you're a pretty big fan. You understand why Tua might not have been put in the best situation. Everyone, including this show, has talked about it at length. The shit supporting cast, the lack of support from his own coach, who honestly had a rough weekend. He couldn't beat Mac Jones and the Patriots with his new squad and was watching Tua light up the scoreboard. But again, he had that major hip injury back to Tua, and that version of Tagovailoa that we saw at Bama, the one we drafted, the one that I know is better than Justin Herbert and Mac Jones when it's all said and done, that quarterback, I think, has arrived. Now, in fact, I know has arrived because throughout the game, despite what people were saying, he was playing well. Everyone said, oh, he kind of came out of nowhere in the fourth quarter. No, he was dealing the whole game. The first interception, dangerous throw. But there is some blame on Tyreek there. He didn't really work back to the ball, which on that comeback route, you need to do. And there is speculation he might have slipped. It does look like he kind of like stomps his feet a bit. But I think he was settling. But again, it's a risky throw on Tua's part. So it is mostly, I'd say 60% on Tua, 40% maybe on Tyreek. But what I love to see was him continue to fire the ball. Wasn't phased at all, even after the second interception, which was worse, and it was his fault. But he just kept slinging it. And let's take a step back, though, right? Because if it wasn't for Tua playing out of his mind, the Dolphins would have likely been blown out. It was that close. The defense was not good. I understand Lamar Jackson was on the other side and, again, was playing out of his mind. But this defensive unit has proven that they can play him well. And trust me, we'll get back to Tua. But just to talk about the defense and going forward, maybe the concerns we could have and what needs to be tightened up. Because yes, you know the Ravens. There's elements outside of the game, not just the X's and O's, that I think a lot of the national media kind of weren't paying attention to. And maybe a lot of fans forgot. But the Ravens were looking for revenge. Even Harbaugh and Lamar were saying it leading up to the game that they had watched the film from that game on Thursday night last year hundreds of times. They claimed that they had answers. They were ready. They were embarrassed, and they wanted to show that, no, that was a fluke. We're a better team than the Miami Dolphins. And unfortunately, from a defensive perspective in Miami, we saw those answers. Lamar was incredible, and it was frustrating that Josh Boyer wasn't really adjusting in the first half, allowing them to just move the ball. And they didn't adjust to that zone scheme, maybe change up your looks. They continued with the zero look that worked so well a season ago. And what we know is this. Look, Miami's defensive scheme is suited to rattle more traditional pocket passers or guys with limited mobility. You saw what it does to a Joe Flacco, a Jared Goff. The pressure is designed to force the quarterbacks to make quick decisions, leading to mistakes or potential sacks, risky throws. They're off platform. They're freaking out. They aren't able to trust their line, trust their own athleticism to get themselves out of that situation. And it allows Miami, who has great cover corners and a good secondary scheme, to feast. However, Baltimore on Sunday was picking up blitz after blitz, and Miami's entire scheme was kind of backfiring. Again, if any team is going to prepare for the look that Miami threw at them, it was Baltimore. But still, you hope to get a better performance from the unit, which again was alleged to start the year to be the backbone of this team, the unit that would lead us to victory. And all Tua and the offense had to do was just be pretty good and we'd be a good team because the defense got us. The Ravens scored 38 points, which is unacceptable. But again, that's 10 points in the second half as opposed to 28 in the first. So adjustments were made, and look, they seemed to work. You wanted to see a unit tighten up as the game progressed, and I think we did see that. I think you can't undersell how the offense's explosion as well helped boost the confidence in the entire team. I feel like we've seen kind of elements of that in the last couple of years where Miami's defense helped have the offense. You know, we have 2 minutes left in this game. We've only put up like 16 points as an offense, but our defense has been locking it down, and we just need to get two first downs, secure the dub. And that confidence that the defense instilled in the offense allowed the Dolphins to close out games. I'm mainly thinking week one of the Pats last year, and honestly, the Pats game at the end of the year when the Patriots kind of made a mini comeback. The Dolphins offense was improved at the end of the year, but again, not to the degree that we saw on Sunday. Now, it seems to have flipped a little bit. The offense was providing that momentum, and that allowed the Dolphins' defense to kind of pick it up, go, oh my God, we're getting carried by Tua and Tyreek here, and Jaylen Waddle, who had a hell of a game. We need to tighten up because we're letting our team down. And I think you kind of saw that because after that 4th-and-1 stop, it was palpable. The momentum shift was palpable. I don't think any Dolphins fan was really vocalizing it because ultimately the trauma and PTSD had us feeling to our deep down, like deep core of our being, that there was no way in hell the Dolphins could pull this off. That if they could make it competitive, that's a step up, but come on, they can't pull it off. But before we get to the studs and duds of the game, I kind of want to address something about that momentum swinging play, in my opinion, which was the 4th-and-1 around midfield that the Ravens went for. Because, you know, fuck Harbaugh. He's a slime ball. Because not only does he have a history of running up the score, you know, going for the record late, I believe it was a couple seasons ago where Tyreek had some rushing record. He was like 8 yards short. And on the last play of the game, cheap shot, just ran it to him. It was kind of a dirty move. He's run up the score on other teams in the past. I mean, 2019, I remember that. So that's why I appreciate this win. 2019 week one, Brian Flores' first game was a massacre. And the Ravens didn't let up. They just kept going. They had won the game, but they just kept going. But I think that the fact that they decided to go for it on 4th-and-1 was a cocky move. And I love that his cocky ass cost him the game. I'm glad it was him who was embarrassed by this historic comeback specifically. The only other person I'd like that to be would be Bill Belichick. But the only reason that I kind of prefer it to be Harbaugh is because if we're having a major comeback from a Bill Belichick coach team sans Tom Brady, that means that that team's probably pretty good or we suck. And I don't like those outcomes. So I'll take the Ravens being pretty good. I'm glad it was Harbaugh because they were up 4th-and-1, right? 4th-and-1. The Ravens are up 21-35. You're in the fourth quarter. You have the audacity to go for it because just from a football perspective, first off, the field position was right around Tucker's range. I think they were at like the 42, 45-yard line. It might have been a little bit too far, which is fine, but ultimately getting those 3 points ices the game, or if you miss the kick, Miami gets the ball the same way. If we stop you on 4th-and-1, we get the ball. So I just feel like you can secure a victory now or you can risk a momentum swing rather than being like, they can't stop us. We're doing it just for shits and giggles. But if you don't want to risk, right? You don't want to give Miami the ball back after missing a kick because you're like, we might as well have gone for it. I understand that thinking, but then be smart. Punt the football. Force the Dolphins to drive all the way down the field and waste time off the clock. precious seconds. If they punted, I'm not so sure that Tucker's field goal at the end to make it 38-35, that wouldn't have happened with just, 10, 15 seconds left rather than minutes, because we got the ball back immediately. Because instead of them being smart, trying to ice the game, they got cocky, and Miami got the stop. The defense stepped up, providing the offense amazing field position, and then scores within seconds of game time. Idiotic coaching, in my opinion. But moving to our studs and duds of the Ravens game, I have a feeling you're going to kind of know right away who's on this list, but who cares? We'll still talk about it. It was an amazing weekend. I've had an amazing week. Stud number one, Tua. It's Tua. We all know why. You've been seeing it on social media. You've been watching it on TV. You've been listening to it in podcasts. That kid, with all the doubt around him, all the hate thrown his way, he showed out. It was a performance that moved the needle. And look, to be honest, who gives a damn if it moves the needle for people who weren't paying attention before? But as a fan, you want to see a kid like that get his flowers. You want to see him get that credit that he deserves. And I hope he lets it hit him. I hope that it gives him confidence moving forward, and that, yes, he should know he can absolutely play at an elite level in this league, and defenses have the film now to also believe it themselves. Now, look, he's got a big test next week, and we're going to get into that in a couple days with the next episode, preview the Buffalo game, which last year I was feeling a lot more cocky going into it, and even though we have a better team, I'm a little more anxious right now about it. I'll just a little preview here, because winning would mean so much more this year than it would last year. And I know you say that every year, but when you look at what Miami has done in the first couple weeks, the weapons they have, how Tua looks just from the eye test, going 3-0 with a win over Buffalo, who has been rolling. Oh boy, I don't even want to talk about it right now. We'll get into it in the next episode. But again, with him at the helm, I'm feeling confident in the direction going forward. That's what he showed me in the Ravens game. He was in control. He understood the offense. And again, that look in his eye. He had a look in his eye. When we got the ball back, 38-35, 2 minutes and 8 seconds, and I believe 2 minutes and some change left in the game. They showed Tua on the sideline, and there was just something there that wasn't there before. Not him walking around asking questions, oh, okay, guys, let's go. He wasn't hyping him up. Because it wasn't about necessarily hyping it up. It was about executing. And he had the look of a man who knew what he wanted to go out and do on that football field. And that, as a fan, as someone who has rooted for the kid for over 2 years now, who's wanted him to be a Dolphin, who never wanted Deshaun Watson, who never wanted Tom Brady and Sean Payton. Sean Payton saying Teddy Bridgewater is going to start this season. Get out of here. You don't know offense. You were carried by Drew Brees. That was proven. But again, it seems like a lot of coaches get carried by elite quarterbacks. But anyway, I digress. The fact that he balled out and is now going to show us for another 15 games what he's got, I am so excited. But everything tragically cannot be positive. Our first dud of the game, Jalen Phillips. There was a lot of hope riding on Phillips entering the season. He finished that rookie campaign with 8 sacks, and again, he has to record yet one in these two games. Not only that, not only has he failed to really get to the quarterback, he's kind of been a non-factor in pressure, and specifically this last week, which is why he's dud number one, he was pretty much a non-factor the whole game. I did not notice him, didn't feel like he was causing Lamar Jackson any problems. The Ravens were able to run the ball as well. He wasn't that stout on the edge. And if Miami's going to become a true contender in this league, even though the offense can be amazing, you still need pass rush. You need pass rushers. And there's a reason you take him, 18th overall. And so far, this season, he's disappointed, especially with all the hype coming into it. It is still very early, and he could bounce back very soon. Similar to his rookie year, he got better as the season went along. We could see that, and it could be even better than we can expect, but just from this game, he would be our first stud. Our second stud, Jalen Waddle. And while watching the game, I was kind of hard on Waddle. I was talking to a friend who was kind of saying Waddle's really playing well. Eagles fan watching on Red Zone, seeing all the highlights, and I was like, I don't know. He bobbled a tough sideline catch, right? That crucial third down. He dropped a pass that Tua threw perfectly right in his chest late in the game. That was almost a game-ending, back-breaking pick. But upon rewatching the game, I realized just how high my bar for Waddle has become and how it's kind of unrealistically high. The kid has been so special since donning the aqua and orange that a simple mistake, like a couple drops and tough spots, obviously the one that hit his chest, you gotta catch it. But that out route that I was kind of like, damn, Waddle. It was more about, as a fan, I was feeling desperate and I needed you to make a play and you didn't. But in reality, it was a tough-ass catch to make. His stats were electric, right? But from the way the offense was utilized, Tyreek, of course, was the explosion, but he was kind of the backbone of the way the Dolphins moved the ball on Sunday. Yeah, Tyreek, like I said, amazing, and we'll get to him. Don't you worry. Tua, again, of course, was the one dealing back there, but Waddle's continued reliability in the passing game, his possession ability, as well as being able to make a guy miss and go another 10 yards, that has been amazing for the Dolphins offense. Short to intermediate routes, it's something that you know Tua relies on. Whenever Tua's feeling like he needs an outlet, there's number 17 to bail him out. Time and time again, not only did he make plays in each quarter of the game, he secured the game-winning touchdown catch on a beautiful route and throw combination between him and Tua that really only happens because of the trust and chemistry between passer and receiver. That alone is unteachable. It's invaluable. But you add in the electric speed and reliable hands, we have ourselves kind of like a wide receiver 1B. And at some point in his career, you know, he's still extremely young. He is already proven to be a clear-cut wide receiver 1 in this league, especially if he continues on this trajectory. He finished the game with 11 receptions, 171 yards, 2 scores, including that game winner. He averaged 15.5 yards per reception, which is a nice jump from what we saw a season ago. Our second dud of the game is Josh Boyer. I touched on it earlier, but you had to know that the Ravens were going to be prepared for the zero look. It almost felt arrogant, right, that Miami was kind of running the same type of game plan as a season ago, expecting the Ravens, who had a whole rest of their season and an offseason and this week to prepare for, to get an answer ready. I get the confidence that Miami was trying to display, and I like that attitude of like, who cares if they know it's coming? We can still play our game and completely shut them down. It's a good one for a defense to have that mindset, but as a coach, this is why Boyer is the second dud, it was apparent pretty quickly that whatever scheme you had was not working. Whatever play calls and sort of overall game plan, you had to make adjustments. It took far too long to make those adjustments, and the defensive unit could very well have cost us the game. When you got Josh Allen coming up next, the unit better have a sound game plan and a great week of practice, or else we're going to need to see Tua do what he did on Sunday again, which is just unrealistic. Our final stud, and I'm going to make this a two-parter, first Tyreek Hill and then Mike McDaniel. Starting with Hill, this is why you bring him in. This is why you pay him all that money. He isn't just a wide receiver, he's a game breaker. And that word is thrown around a lot. Game breaker. Oh, explosive, dynamic. But what we saw Sunday is the definition of game breaker. He literally broke the game. Two deep touchdown bombs from Tua to bring Miami back is something only a guy like him and a handful of others can do. We saw it time and time again. We saw it, he did it with Alex Smith. He's done it with Patrick Mahomes, and now he's doing it with Tua. So it's not just like a fluke. He has done this over time, and we will see this again. He finished Sunday with 11 receptions as well, but 190 yards because of those big plays and 2 key touchdowns to secure a comeback, which, again, that shows in the stats. His, unlike Waddle, with 15.5 yards per reception, Tyreek had 17.3 yards per reception. Chef's kiss, baby, chef's kiss. Our final dud, and this one pains me, but it's the other second-year defensive stud, Javon Holland. Holland was nowhere to be seen. He was a non-factor in stopping the run. He was not really preventing the big plays. There were a lot of big plays. And he wasn't really seemingly used as effectively to blitz off the edge like he was a season ago when he was able to get a sack against Lamar. You could argue that Brandon Jones had a rougher day. I mean, he didn't do well. He missed a lot more in coverage than you saw Javon do, but there's more expected from Javon Holland, and that's why he's going to be our final dud. I will say, I expect a bounce back from him because no one is keeping Javon Holland down for long. He's already proven as a captain in his second year, the way he's progressed through his career, that, you know, he's allowed to have a down game. He's still an incredibly young player, and again, in hindsight, I'm not some NFL head coach. I'm not a scout. He might have played far better than I'm giving him credit for, but you just want him to be a force multiplier. You want him to pop week in and week out, especially when our defense is struggling like they did for three quarters of that game, but he never really seemed to help Miami make the play to turn the tide. Frankly, I give more credit to the interior line, the front seven, who's able to stuff those fourth and ones. The secondary, including Xavien Howard, did not do well at all. Now look, although the defense did not come to play, we did ultimately win the game, and that's all that matters. This fan base has been clamoring for a guy to put the team on his back and carry us, and that's exactly what Tua did. To all of you who claimed that I was just biased and a blind fan supporting Tua, you're right there, I am. But in reality, there were flashes that I know a ton of you were seeing as well. A ton of you who in the comments, on social media, you know, just in conversation with your fellow Dolphins fans or defending Tua from other teams' fans, who you saw those flashes. I had no allegiance to this dumb take I made. I just had faith that a kid who rocked the football world in college with that moxie, accuracy, elite decision making, who showed glimpses of all of that in the league, would be able to put it together in the right circumstance and find a way to be successful like he has at every step of his career. You go all the way back to episode one of the Fins Pod. You get on YouTube, filter it by oldest to newest. It's got like 200 views. All the way back. It was prior to the 2020 NFL draft. What did we see in Tua as a prospect? We talked about it then. Drew Brees, Steve Young, a smaller but decisive quarterback like Drew Brees, but a lefty like Steve Young, and also a little more athletic than you would think based on his body type. And again, like those two, the clutch gene. We saw that in spades yesterday. I cannot wait for this weekend. I mean, it's like I can wait because I love this sort of zone of pure bliss that we as fans are in. And we know ultimately it's going to come to an end to a certain degree. You hope the team stays good, but Miami cannot be undefeated. There's going to be a point where we got to lose. And that's where I got to give Mike McDaniel credit. Like I was saying, he was one of our studs earlier in the show because he's 2-0 against two decent coaches just from a game plan standpoint, from a balls standpoint. It's nerve-wracking. Yeah, the team's better. Of course, we have better talent. Oh, maybe the scheme. But your job as a coach isn't just to have better players. You got to coach them. You got to prepare them. You got to have a game. You got to call the game. And he's done it against two Super Bowl winners. So, again, combine that with everything. Combine it with what Tua has in terms of his skill set. That's amazing. I cannot wait to see what this team has in store going forward and even this week in Buffalo, because if we win, oh my God, are we going to be insufferable. But I'm happy to be back, and thank you to all who sent messages asking about the show. Life's kind of been crazy, and I had some major changes occur, which kind of forced me to put the pod on the back burner, but no more. We're back, and I cannot wait for the ride that we're all about to be on together. Fins all the way up, 2-0, baby.
I think for Tua, he took a step forward. Now, was yesterday the end-all, be-all as far as him being the franchise quarterback? I don't know if anybody's ready to go there. I'm not.
Just got to play it out.
Got to play it out. But yesterday,
fundamentals were there.
Yesterday was a step, and everything you speak to about his fundamentals or thing that was lacking. I want to ask you this. The comparison has been made to Drew Brees and yourself. Maybe minus some of your athleticism, a guy that can be accurate, a guy that can get the ball out, a guy that processes information quickly. Do you see that?
Yes.
Okay.
Last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And it was significantly different. A step function better than I saw to anything in the last two or 3 years. Step function better, and that you can build off. And that's why the big comeback and all the thing, it's a big flash, but underneath it was substance.
Gotcha.
That's going to do it for us today. Thank you guys so much for listening to the Fins Pod. Hope you enjoyed it. Thank you to Timothy Ritchie, Brian Guger, Chris, and Commander Pig, members of the pod and supporters of the show over on Patreon. Check that out, links in the description, or head to patreon.com/finspod. Thank you all so much for the continued support, and please remember to like the video if you enjoyed the show. Subscribe just so you never miss a chance to chat about your Miami Dolphins. And remember that the show is available on all platforms, Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts, and of course, YouTube. Continue the conversation with us over on Twitter and Instagram, @finspod. I hope you all have an amazing day. Until next time, stay safe. Love y'all.